Hello, and welcome to the Data Development Podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to data experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or you can join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Got Brian Johnson here. He's the head of technology at 4 Street. Thanks for doing this, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to the conversation. Before we get stuck in, usual, I suppose, just to give the listeners a bit of context, if you wouldn't mind just covering over some of your background and experiences.
Yeah, so I am first and foremost a data strategist and have been for quite a while, probably before that became a more fashionable thing. My background is in building data systems. I've been doing it for about 20 years. And around 10 years ago, I transitioned to data strategy when I had yet another client ask me to build another iteration of a data warehouse. And my question back to them was, well, what will be different about this third iteration that the first two didn't solve? And that transition to moving away from building yet another data warehouse, yet another BI solution, and into finding out how to support business strategies with data strategies. So I spent my entire career more or less in the UK, mainly based out of London, although I've lived in Bath for the last 6 years. And a couple of years ago, I joined actually one of my clients called 4 Street. So for 4 Street, I was doing data strategy and building a AI and automation solution to track every IT company in the world. The idea being, when we provide technology advisory, we want to know the long list of companies that do a thing, such as data visualization software. So I was building for my client, and now it's my my full-time job, building ways to identify the long list of companies that do something, and then specifically identify what the USP is of each of those companies. And then on the side, as part of 4 Street, we do technology advisory, so I continue doing data strategy. So I have a handful of clients where I am still not building data warehouses, but instead finding the capabilities they need to support their data solutions.
Awesome, mate. Well, I assume that you were working for like some sort of consultancy or something before you
ended. Yeah, so I started in industry, and then I moved to Accenture. Right. It was a fantastic learning experience to learn all the things I've been doing wrong and had taught myself in industry. I had that corrected, and then I moved to Capgemini. And then about 6 years ago, I went independent and had a number of clients, and then before I joined 4 Street.
Awesome, mate. Awesome. Well, yeah, it's an interesting one. I actually was down in London talking with a couple of data engineers and stuff yesterday. So yeah, it's funny that you kind of opened with the, yet again, another data warehouse. And when I ask why, you know, there's kind of blank stares. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I always get the sense of this as well. I don't know whether this is like far too layman, so do excuse me. But, you know, it seems that there's a lot of kind of overcomplication of data at times. And perhaps like there's this constant desire to seek something or to answer like a question that people already have like a prerequisite bias towards. And I think that's where like the overcomplication and the frustration comes when, you know, they eventually get, you know, the Tableau dashboard and it doesn't quite say exactly what they want. Is perhaps why, you know, there's this kind of vicious cycle of having to go back and, you know, redo things again.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things in your question there. It's interesting. Let's talk about the data engineering side of things. Mm-hmm. So data engineering is a distinctly different capability than, say, building a data warehouse. Mm-hmm. And it's also, frankly, a lot more difficult. And it's one that if you speak to true data engineers, of which there really aren't that many, but if you speak to a true data engineer, they bring to light what is actually complicated about data and how to simplify it. Most organizations will need data engineering but not every data warehouse, for example, needs it. So it's a different skill set. Let me give you an example. Do you have a good feeling of what data engineering is, if you were trying to describe it to someone?
Probably not. So I'm not going to try. I mean, I like to think I do, but probably not.
The shorthand is it's building data pipelines. But the longer answer, and one of the exercises I do with my clients to help them understand the differences, here's a case study. So there is a UK-based bank that has subsidiaries all around the world. Mm-hmm. As part of financial regulations, they have Know Your Customer, KYC requirements. And they want to automate that KYC check. Mm-hmm. And part of that is making sure that you have the right documentation on file. You have your customers' passports and utility bills and previous bank statements and a handful of other documentations. So say you've got a team of data scientists in London who want to automate the KYC solution, but there's a backlog of 100,000 customers in Singapore. And that's going to be your case study. That's how you're going to build your AI algorithm, your mainly that NLP and image recognition algorithm. So you've got a repository of 100,000 PDFs. Let's say, and each of those are maybe actually the folder structures that say, this is Brian Johnson and he's a customer, and here's some scans of documentation. All right, so the question I'll ask you this is, where do you start? You have your team in London, and you have these PDFs sitting in Singapore. Where do you start?
I'm guessing Singapore.
Right. So you've got those, but your team's in London. So your data scientists are in London, and this is where you're going to eventually have your algorithm reside on a server in London. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? What's step one?
So move everything to the cloud.
All right. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So that's move everything to the cloud. Mm-hmm. All right. So you've just described what a data engineer would need to spend weeks, if not months, architecting, and months or more building. Mm-hmm. Because what you've just identified, and then you move it, because I assume step two, you're going to say, then have your data scientists use that to do some image recognition and understanding and figuring out, do you have the right documentation?
Right. Right.
But, you know, most of my clients use the word. They say, "Oh, I used this last week." My client, that client said, "Oh, you get the files."
Right.
Right. So how do you get them?
Right.
And then they said, "Well, you can email them." And of course, that's the worst possible answer. But what you're looking at in a project plan to develop an AI solution such as this is the most risky, the most difficult, and the most time-consuming element of it is actually going to be, quote-unquote, getting the files.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You have to do it securely. You have to make sure they all arrive. You have to do checks on both ends of the transaction. You have to make sure that each of the individual pages arrived. You need to make sure, especially if this is ongoing, you need to make sure that the individual pages arrived without defect, that there aren't a page in accidentally duplicate.
Right.
That the folder structures are set up correct. So you have to make sure that the files arrive. You have to make sure the files arrive completely and every page is there. Mm-hmm. And what you end up with is a data engineering challenge that is going to be greater potentially than the data science, machine learning, and AI challenge. Mm-hmm. Not only that, the data engineer should be doing the precursor work of the data scientist job. For example, if you have 100,000 sets of PDFs, and you want to do image recognition to make sure the passport is there, wouldn't it be nice if all of the passport pages are flagged to say this is a passport page instead of, say, a utility bill page? Mm-hmm. In which case, how do you parse that, understand that it's a passport page, reorientate it? How do you deal with different languages? How do you deal with different versions of the same passport if there's a Hong Kong passport versus a Chinese passport, same language, but potentially different structures. So all these become data engineering challenge before you even run your first model to generate what you are attempting to do. So That's a long answer to that part of your question about data engineering. Mm-hmm. I think some of the other things to unpack. You talk about overcomplications mm-hmm. of data and why a Tableau report doesn't work. Most organizations who don't focus on data strategy or have never had a data strategy exercise often will have roadmaps. We'll often have roadmaps of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you'll know it when you see it, but it's a bit of technology here, a bit of use case there, hire a consultancy here. It's you look at it and it's just stuff. Mm-hmm. And what is typically missing is the organization to support data. And I have a model that has 50 different data capabilities. And I believe, and I built this model over 10 years, that there are 50 data capabilities required to truly support data in an organization. Frankly, no organization uses all 50. Mm-hmm. It typically works out to 20 to 30 is what's really required. But take, for example, a few of these things that, let me give you a few examples mm-hmm. of data capabilities that could contribute to a lack of a Tableau report working. How many organizations, Andy, do you know that have a data HR capability? In other words, having a data specialist within the HR function to ensure that everyone in the organization has the correct objectives and tied to remuneration mm-hmm. that ensure that data is managed correctly.
Oh, well, it's easy. That's easy. Zero.
Except for some of the organizations I've worked with. But
well, I've never, you asked me personally. And
the answer is zero. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So this is... And it sounds really natural. It's like, well, yeah, if you're having a problem with your sales dashboard because salespeople are not inputting the right data at the point of sale, mm-hmm. Which is a very common problem because sales have to get made. But typically, sales organizations don't incentivize their staff on data input. Yeah. They entirely incentivize on sales, except there are downstream implications for banging in a new customer record or putting in a dummy contact when you didn't have the right contact information in order to make that sale. Bigger companies, bigger organizations with thousands or tens of thousands of employees need to cascade data objectives throughout their organization. Yeah. So there's a KPI cascading around those data objectives that could be done. And that's an example of one capability that seems, I don't know, perhaps somewhat obvious when I say it, but no one really does. And it's a root cause of a lot of problems with, as your example, a Tableau dashboard.
Yeah.
Well, and there's 49 of those other capabilities that that are oftentimes root causes for companies.
Yeah. Well, companies. It seems to me like you're kind of alluding to like the cultural necessity for people's proactiveness when it comes to data, whether they're directly involved with the warehousing or the engineering of data. It seems like it's ultimately a cultural thing that everyone needs to abide to within the organization.
There is always a cultural component to why data is being mistreated, but it's almost always different. Mm. And let me give you some examples. So I worked at a transport provider who, when we did our detailed analysis, there was a cultural issue that the business did not trust IT, and the relationship was frankly broken. And that meant that the business was going out procuring their own systems without line of sight to IT, without line of sight to enterprise architecture or the data architects. And as you would expect, that was causing problems. Another company, an East Midlands engineering firm, is a celebrated engineering and invention company. Mm-hmm. So they celebrate workarounds. They celebrate invention. So when an engineer couldn't get the numbers or the database to work in the way that it should, rather than calling the IT system, they created workarounds. They created cottage data warehouses, cottage models and algorithms and left them on personal machines, left them in drawers, and didn't, you know, we counted 2,000 shadow data warehouses at the organization. And all 2,000 of them, frankly, were celebrated by their bosses. They got rewarded for circumventing the system. Other companies had so many different, one other company in particular, a food service provider, had so many different consulting companies and different methodologies hoisted on them that they wanted to go back to pen and paper. Culturally, they felt safer doing their monthly reports more or less on pen and paper because they felt they had the greater control. One final example, a company, a toy manufacturer that I worked with, they nearly went bankrupt at one point. They had a turnaround, but they still had the hangup of that time period where they felt like they were under siege. And in order to combat that bankruptcy, they created a war room mentality and created data war rooms all over the organization. And they were so inundated by individual data points that it was impossible to tell the big top line stories in some cases. And I walked into one room that was probably a 3 meter by 3 meter high room. And it was covered, the entire wall was covered in this month's dashboards. There were tens of thousands of data points. My question to the COO of that company was, so how do you know what matters in this? And the answer was, it was difficult to find it, but you know, someone was going around with a highlighter, a Sharpie, and circling the thing that they thought mattered. But there were still 100 things circled on that wall out of the 10,000 data points. So culturally, every organization has a different challenge, a different flavor of what's going to be an impediment. And frankly, there's no silver bullet. There's no single capability that's going to change that East Midland Engineering company's cultural celebration. But there are a number, a portfolio of capabilities that start to chip away at that, to start to make sure that they are doing the right things with data and doing it in a consistent way.
If you were a startup business, or you're about
which you are,
so but say for instance you just getting started, like you're not open for business yet, you know, and you were building, I don't know, whatever, a marketplace or something, right? Digital marketplace, for example. How would you go about ensuring, it's like step 1, 2, 3 on implementation of, you know, data structures? Would it be using something like a segment? Like, how would you set things up from the start in the ideal world so that it seems to me like a lot of, you know, the roles that exist are in data are because the way that either the legacy systems through old businesses or newer businesses that have just not done, for lack of a better, for a layman term, not done data correctly from the beginning. So what would you do if you were that person and you were getting things started from the beginning?
So a blank sheet of paper rather than moving into a brownfield organization. Look, very few companies are data companies, right? If you make soap, you're good at making soap. You're not particularly good at managing the data about making soap. Mm-hmm. So the companies that are data first companies, that happen to sell other things, that grew up as a data company that happens to sell soap, they don't hire data strategists. They are, these things come naturally to them. Mm-hmm. So startups, and a number of them are attempting to be data first startups. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the reality of a startup is, you have to take shortcuts. You are not able to hire a data HR specialist in order to ensure that your small team of startup employees all have the right objectives relating to data, mm-hmm. right? You end up taking shortcuts. So from a greenfield perspective, some of the things are exactly the same between big organizations and startups. The first is you need to have a data architect. You need to focus on what the data architecture is going to be from the very start of your application. Mm-hmm. In some businesses, the data could be worth more than the business itself.
Right.
So there is, and some startups recognize that. I believe some startups are in the business of selling one thing, but actually harvesting data as their primary objective. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then you need to treat your data as the valuable asset it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And what, like, in layman's terms, like, what is that process? Like, is it a bespoke system? What would, you know, your recommendation, without completely name dropping a load of tools, but, you know, what?
And it's not about tools. If your startup doesn't have a data architect or an enterprise architect who has a strong data background, you're probably missing a trick. And by data architect, it's someone who has built data warehouses, has data engineering skills, knows a bit about data science in order to anticipate what algorithms would be used, would understand the ecosystem of both cloud and locally hosted data platforms, and be able to choose between them and move the business in the right direction. But if your startup doesn't have that data literate architect, you're going to cause problems downstream. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even large organizations. I was attempting to work with a company about 3 years ago who was doing a major website replatforming. And I offered my services, and we did a series of informal workshops and pointed out the things that a data architect would give their business. Mm-hmm. In this time of transition. They chose not to hire me, which is fine, but they didn't hire anyone else. 3 years later, one of their senior executives had come back to me and said they would have probably saved £10 million had they listened to my advice and hired a data architect. Mm-hmm.
Like from the beginning?
From that time, I pointed out. And at that point, they were already probably several years too late. But from the time I recommended that, it was probably £10 million cost.
That's crazy.
For a single, maybe two people to work full time in their business. So that is, knowing your data architecture from the outset is absolutely critical, whether you're developing a new website, whether you're selling and delivering flowers door to door as a startup. There's no substitute for having a data professional.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good advice. It's good advice. Because like you said, I mean, I think as well, like, you don't know, especially building a startup, what direction things are going to go. But like you say, eventually it could just be the fact that if you do the data right, that is the business, that is the value. So I think it's a really good point.
If you're selling flowers door to door.
Yeah.
And you have an inventory of people who are committed to buying high-end flowers. What is the margin on those flowers versus what is the margin of selling ancillary products and services to that select group of people?
Right. Yeah, it could be significantly different, couldn't it?
Yep. You know a lot about those people. If you were a dry cleaner, who else has such access to a woman's wardrobe and knows the different brands that woman buys? Mm-hmm. And specifically what items and what sizes and what colors are being purchased. So credit card companies know that a woman purchases at both Coast and LK Bennett. Mm-hmm. Assuming they use the same card. But they don't know what was purchased, whether it was a dress or a skirt or a jacket. They can't see how things are changing. They don't know that that dress is oftentimes worn with that jacket because they both get dry cleaned at the same time. Mm-hmm. A dry cleaner making relatively low margins per item cleaned could actually harvest the macro trends of their clientele and sell that information anonymized, but know profiles and segments of the population and how their trends are changing.
Fascinating. Yeah. Exactly. I can't say any better than that, Brian. It's really interesting, mate. I think obviously always give people the opportunity to just kind of mention, you know, in your case, 4th Street, and just how people can find out, see any career opportunities, or just learn more about, you know, what you guys are up to.
Yeah, so 4th Street provides technology advisory. Our clients are sometimes investment houses looking for the next acquisition. Sometimes they are startups looking to articulate how they are positioned in the marketplace and why investors should invest in them. And most often they are large organizations that need to figure out what technology they should procure. So we have the longest list of, for example, data visualization software providers. Our list shows that there's 400 different data visualization tools out there, which is that's a longer list than anyone else. Which means there's more opportunity to find some value for specific use cases. So 4th Street, find out about us at forestreet.com, look me up, Brian Johnson, on LinkedIn. Happy to chat about data, as you can tell. We'd love to talk more.
Brian, it's been a pleasure, mate. Really enjoyed that. Thank you so much, mate.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturers Voice Slack group. See you next time.